one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, welcome to your Friday edition of Hittin' Season, a Philadelphia Phillies podcast. I'm Justin Clue. I write for Baseball Prospectus, and I'm the author of Summer of the Cheap Wieners, what the 1941 Phillies were up to while Joe DiMaggio was making history. Available now. With me is John Stolness, staff writer for The Good Fight. Hello, John.
Hello. We have a staff at The Good Fight. This is news to me. How about, yes, you're right about that.
There's a list of people, and they contribute, and I think it's totally fair. It's
yes, that's a staff. I guess that's a staff. Yeah, good point.
Well, at least when I was there, we would pass around a staff to determine who was able to talk at that to prevent confusion. So I'm also
it's still there.
Yeah, it's great still website. There.
Thank you.
I'm glad we're getting off on such a positive note. Just a lot to talk about. And I don't know if you've listened to or recorded a Phillies podcast lately, but it's a bit of a challenge to stay rosy. I figured we'd start off talking a bit. Well, let's start with the Dodgers. Roky Sasaki of the Dodgers, John, was considering a full mechanical overhaul. Did you see this? This poor Roky was struggling, couldn't get the ball, struggling with command, couldn't get the ball to go where he wanted it to go. Mm-hmm. Tipping his pitches became an issue, was they thought. What a huge problem for the poor old Dodgers. But then they just gave him a bigger glove and problem solved. He's just got to, just up the size of his glove. Imagine if the Phillies could solve problems that way quickly, effectively, and kind of fun.
and it works for every one of them. Yeah, that would be unusual. It is interesting that he started talking about himself like he's like a 1978 Chevelle. You know, I just got to revamp, go under the hood. We're gonna figure out what's causing the leaks, It's what the Dodgers do, man. They are a machine.
Yeah, fun stuff. Well, that's enough of that. Bryce Harper says the Phillies need some help. Don Mattingly says that's our Bryce, and then some corny sitcom music played, and the Phillies won the World Series. What a week! As we remove the haze of delusion from our coverage, but I do think, John, following this three-game sweep at the hands of the Marlins, who again set a franchise record for losing consecutive baseball games heading into this series with the Phillies, that there was a shift, I felt, especially after Game 3. Well, before Game 3, but then also definitely after Game 3, in how people were talking about the Phillies, what they were talking about in regards to the Phillies, how severely those comments were coming out in regards to the Phillies. So not really a different direction in the commentary, but perhaps just further down. As the Phillies were swept by the Marlins in Miami, blowing Game 3 after having a 6-0 lead in the fifth inning. And that shift was not in Don Mattingly's favor. But I think everybody's feeling a lot worse about the Phillies in general, not just because they've been losing, but because of the depth and amount of their flaws, the lack of answers on a bleak trade deadline landscape, and the seeming helplessness of everyone in a position to act. And we'll get into this a little more specifically. Can't wait. But how did you feel that after that? Did you feel the same way sort of after the Wednesday loss?
Yeah. Congratulations, Phillies. You have completely drained all the enthusiasm from the fan base. I mean, it was waning kind of coming into the series, even coming into the season. You know, a lot of folks didn't have a whole lot of confidence that this team could pick themselves up off the mat yet again with the same cast of characters and get it done. And now I'll say that the Phillies have had series like this before during successful seasons. I want to make that, I hope that everybody understands that. Like, we have felt this exact, well, not this exact same thing, but we have felt very similar things in the midst of seasons that ended up turning out all right.
This very season, actually, we have felt
maybe
this way
even
before.
2 months back. Yes, exactly right. In April, we were done. We had written this team off, and then they came out firing. But there are more ominous signs. This one feels a little different to me. And they're older. They're not playing as well. They haven't really played well all season. They have been supported by seven players essentially during the 2 month hot streak that they had, where they've carried a negative run differential essentially the entire season, and now they're kind of playing down to that run differential. That's what they've been doing over the last 40. They're 20-20 in their last 40 games, and now you're going to throw in all of the off the field drama, right? We're bringing back the Dave Dombrowski elite comments. Matt Gelb called it a 10-month cold war between Dave Dombrowski and Bryce Harper. Don Mattingly getting into the mix here. I mean, I don't know how in depth we want to get into this right away. I think it feels like we're kind of just taking a nice zoomed out approach to everything, but I feel going into this trade deadline, which is on Monday, that what can even be done at this trade deadline to really matter? And that's kind of where my heart's not in it. You know, I don't see what they can do to rally the troops and to flip a switch for me in terms of my enthusiasm for where these guys are right now, because they just seem lost.
You look around and you realize, oh my gosh, we're suddenly in the middle of one of those times where other teams get back on track by playing the Phillies. They have a really good time playing the Phillies. You and then you, the fan, feel like, as you said, yeah, we've been through tough times before, but this one feels different, which I will still also push back on and say they always feel like they are unique when it's happening. And I'm not even and you said, you know, 2 months back we felt similarly, which is accurate. However, that 2 months makes a difference in the situation as well, because, you know, we had two extra months for them to get better last time, and this time again it feels like a classic slow decline from this group of Phillies in particular, who, you know, if you've got any kind of like 2022 memorabilia up anywhere in your house, or like you have the program from any of those playoff games, as I do, you know, you walk by that stuff and you're like, look at those guys. And they're like smiling and celebrating with each other. And when you feel like they've lost even that component, which it does kind of feel like these guys are they having fun out there? Are they operating as a unit? No. So you're like, I'm not sure we even have a starting point to grab onto, a foothold for the argument to be like, yeah, but things will turn around. They will, because there's enough baseball left that the Phillies will start. You know, I think they've got a cluster of wins still under the hood somewhere. I don't think the season is over yet, but it's certainly provided a very dark outlook for this team when you see them at their bottom. And I think they are unique in the sense that among contending teams, or teams on the bubble, however you want to characterize them at this point, they swing more wildly from top to bottom than anybody. And the scope of that is wider than I think any other contending teams, where when the Phillies are playing well, I'm not going to say they look unbeatable, but they look really tightened up. When they have like a starter every night that's going 6-7 innings, an offense that's scoring a couple of runs, and a bullpen that's getting the job done. Yeah, I mean, that's what a good team looks like. They look like they can beat anybody. And then you have like superstars going off in their uniquely superstar ways, like Schwarber or Harper or Wheeler. Then, yeah, you start thinking, all right, this team has an edge to it. They're not just good, they have an edge. But then when they're playing poorly, they look absent. They look like they have no business being close to a playoff spot. They look like they don't know what they're doing. They don't look like they know the rules of baseball some of the time. So, I think that is also part of the mood set here, which, again, I don't want to sit here and talk about people's reactions to the Phillies, because I think we're all generally in the same place. And you mentioned talking about specifics. I do want to go back and drill down on what the actual Bryce Harper comment was, because this situation feels even funnier because of how needless it is, even more so than the Dombrowski Cold War.
Yeah.
The troublesome Bryce Harper comment, as quoted on Phillies.com, was, I think we need some help. But, you know, I think we've proven pretty much all year we've done a pretty good job. But anytime you can get some help in here and reinforcements, I think it helps. What did Don Mattingly really not like about that? That the Phillies could use help? That they've been pretty good this year? That he said, that Harper said, and I'm paraphrasing only the slightest bit here, anytime you can get some help, I think it helps. He is so close to saying absolutely nothing. He's closer to saying nothing than any kind of statement about his teammates. But no, according to Phillies.com, what Mattingly took umbrage with was Harper's candor. I sense Bryce thinking about it, Mattingly said. I don't really sense anybody else thinking about it, honestly. So we recorded a new episode of Absolutely Hammered, available over on the Hidden Season Patreon last night. And when I read that quote on that show, I paused right here because I'll do it again, because I want to react to this part first. Don Mattingly doesn't sense anybody other than Bryce Harper thinking about the trade deadline, thinking about the roster, thinking about potential acquisitions. If Don Mattingly doesn't sense anybody other than Harper feeling like they need help, then he's got the situational awareness of Trey Turner staring down a grounder or JT Realmuto on third base in the ninth. I don't think that's a genuine thing that you can say and be taken seriously. I think that's silly.
All right. So my initial reaction to what Bryce Harper said was I had an issue with it as well. And I the way it came across to me was when he's saying, yeah, we need help. Well, my initial reaction is you have a OPS of like under 600 in the month of July. You could be the help. So do better. Look at yourself before externalizing. And what you're saying is when the first words out of your mouth are, we need help, what you're essentially saying is, okay, well, let's finish the sentence. What if you don't get that help? Are you sunk? Do you not believe in you and your teammates' ability to do the job? Let's say Dave Dombrowski doesn't get you help. Let's say he gets rebuffed on every trade offer that's out there, anything decent that's out there, and you don't get very much. Well, now you've painted yourself into a corner. You said, we need help. You're basically saying, like, in order to win, we need help.
But that doesn't change the fact that you need help. It means Dave Dombrowski, skill issue on the trade market at the trade deadline. That's not Harper's fault.
No, it's not Harper's fault either that they came into the season with so many holes. I'm not absolving Dave Dombrowski of any blame whatsoever. He put a team together that is entirely top heavy, and that any time the superstars aren't playing to maximum capacity, there's nothing to help. There are no middle players on this team. You've got a bunch of players playing around replacement level, and even the superstars aren't playing at a superstar level. You know, Schwarber's WAR is 2.5. Harper's WAR is 2 on the nose. Harper right now, in terms of Baseball Reference wins above replacement, his WAR is tied for 80th best in baseball. So, I mean, even the superstars are not, and Brandon Marsh has come down to earth, you know, so you've just got all these different guys. Sanchez has been a little bit more up and down. Wheeler had, what can you say about Wheeler? Bad last start. You just pray that there's nothing major happening with Zach Wheeler there. The roster is not a bad roster. The roster has major issues with it. So I agree. And I don't think Bryce Harper's wrong when he says the Phillies need help. To me, it wasn't him saying, like, you know, it would be great to get, you know, like every team we could, you know, we could always use good baseball players here. Every team needs good baseball players. You know, no team is a finished product. Every team is perfect. No team is perfect. So, you know, anything Dave Dombrowski can bring in at the trade deadline, we would welcome it. He didn't say it like that. He's basically saying, like, my impression was, like, we can't do this ourselves and we need Dave Dombrowski to fix this for us. Where I'm coming from is, like, man, fix the thing you can control, which is you. The only thing that you can control, the only thing that you can really say for any certain that you have any control over is how you play. And that to me is, like, fix that first. Like, if he had a 900 OPS right now and was kind of carrying the team and the rest of the team is crumbling around him and he says kind of like, I need help, we need help, I could understand that more. Like, if it's James Wood or C.J. Abrams saying something like that, where he's got a pitching staff that's falling apart around them, that makes a little more sense than when it's coming from Bryce Harper, who is having his own struggles at the plate right now.
I just don't think he crossed the line into that specific a statement, though. I mean, he's not Donovan McNabb saying, well, we were leading when we came off the field. Like, he's not throwing that at anybody. He's saying, I think we need some help. And you're right. He could be that help. And that is, I don't think it's a perfect statement. There's a more crafted version of his statement that exists for sure. And you and I could write a better one right now on this show of what a player could respond with in that situation, especially if you want to say basically nothing, which is essentially what he said. I also agree with the idea that in general, you don't want your player saying something that you would hear a fan saying in public. If you want to take issue with that, yeah, that's fine. Because then you get into this territory of, like, hey, man, like, what do you mean by that? Blah, 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 blah. But I also just think if Mattingly doesn't stop, like, I know he gets asked the question, but if he doesn't stop and unpack it in this way, and I'm going to read the rest of his quote in a second, then I'm not even really thinking about Harper's quote for more than a second anyway. So when you have Mattingly, yeah. And the other issue with Mattingly's response is that He didn't make any of the arguments we're making. He makes I don't see anybody else thinking about it argument, which I think is nothing, which is a lie, essentially. and also he says, I've been through this. Guys want to be GMs. What you need without a real understanding of where the organization is, exactly where this thing goes, not only this year, but moving forward. So, I mean, players like being GMs and making calls and spending other people's money. So let it go at that. That is a whole other angle to take on this, which I don't care for that response at all. I mean, further quotes indicate, as you were saying, that Mattingly's point is a little more clearly is that he is he also doesn't like that the team needs help because you're actually saying that some of your teammates aren't good and need to be replaced. Fine. But if nobody, like I said, had bothered to stop and say that, I just wouldn't have thought about that. And I guess maybe that's something you have to think about if you're in-house with the Phillies and that kind of commentary's out there. Again, that's fair. But Harper has always said out loud what he thinks the Phillies should do. And more importantly, I don't think you need to be an MLB GM to point out that the Phillies need help. He didn't stress any particular players or dollar amounts for the team to spend, so it's an odd route to say, like, oh, they love spending other people's money. Well, guess what? It's the owner's job to spend money and make the team better. Some owners don't see it like that, but that is the job. And frankly, you know, like I said, the sensing people thing is ridiculous. I just found Mattingly's answer to seem really dismissive of Harper's thoughts because he's a player. It felt disingenuous in his hand waving away and also rather defensive of ownership. So is this a man who thinks his best chance at keeping his job is to defend his boss's honor rather than, say, manage a pitching staff well enough to win a ball game?
Yeah, I think it's fair to say that it seems like Mattingly's trying to carry Dave Dombrowski's water here. And I don't know why Dave Dombrowski wouldn't just come out and say something if he had a problem with what Bryce Harper was saying. It does feel that way. But, I mean, Mattingly is a short timer. I don't think there's a chance Mattingly is the manager of this team next year. Dave Dombrowski doesn't want him to be the manager. They want to bring Alex Cora in if there's a season next year to be the Phillies manager, you know? So, I mean, I don't know. I think Mattingly was just genuinely genuinely annoyed by it. And I don't know what Bryce Harper is like personally off the field. I think Bryce Harper is probably a grating personality. And I think a lot of this also stems from the fact that he wanted a new contract extension a couple of years ago and has been pushing for that and hasn't gotten it. And so he's kind of being a little bit of a squeaky wheel. He's still mad about the elite comments that Dave Dombrowski made at the end of last year. And
got called out about the FanDuel thing.
Yep, got called out about the FanDuel thing. I mean, and so there's just, and now he's struggling. So Bryce Harper is frustrated as much with himself, and I will give him credit. He did say, too, in those comments that he needs to do better. But I would have led with that, though. I don't think Bryce Harper says anything accidentally. I don't think he was speaking in the heat of the moment. I think everything Bryce Harper says and does is planned. He doesn't accidentally go put on a t-shirt that says elite. You know,
he did. He said he was. You know,
and that's a load of crap. That's a load of nonsense. Nobody believes that. Nobody believes that. So he's playing games in the media. Bryce Harper's playing. He's trying to send Dombrowski. Just stop doing that. Stop it. Dave Dombrowski knows he needs to make moves. He's not stupid. And you saying something like that is not, if I'm Dave Dombrowski, I'm probably a little bit annoyed that one of my players is trying to force my hand and strong arm me or put public pressure on me to act. I'm not enjoying that. I'm not liking that. And I don't want that to be something that the other players feel like that they can start doing either. I mean, I know Bryce Harper is a special case, but also, dude, you know, have better than the 35th best OPS in baseball if you're going to start talking like this. I mean, I know it's the second best number on the team, but, you know, we're kind of at a low bar here with that sort of thing. So I don't know. I felt like it was terrible timing. I felt just like what Harper said about the elite comments, how he took offense at that and how he continued to take offense with it during the entire winter. It felt tone deaf to me. It's like, man, just this is not what the team needs right now. We don't need these off the field distractions to add to the issues that you guys are having on the field. And that's exactly what's happened because of all this.
This is in general a continuance of the overall messiness that has been a back burner and occasionally front burner issue for the Philadelphia Phillies at this time. And it is a shame. I don't know how much of it really gets like talked about nationally. So there's a chance this is like, you know, a hot story regionally, but there's been a general current of messiness and Harper's been involved in pretty much all of it. So, I, you know, we heard, like you said, we heard from Matt Gelb. There's still that sort of a rift between Harper and Dombrowski. Now we've got these like competing notions between him and Mattingly in the press, which also, by the way, I love the part where they're like, all right, are you going to say any of this to Bryce? And Mattingly was like, no. So that was,
yeah, see, I think he is a larger than life presence in that clubhouse. I don't think even an established Hall of Fame caliber player like Don Mattingly doesn't feel comfortable going up to Bryce Harper and talking to Bryce Harper. I don't think Dombrowski feels comfortable doing that. I think he has an enormous amount of power in that clubhouse, and I don't necessarily know that the Phillies love it. But I mean, they had to know that it was coming when you went and signed Bryce Harper, and it hasn't been a problem until very recently as the results on the field have started to sour. And now this is what comes, like, you have, and this is what we said this all offseason, you hear me say this a million times, like, this is why not bringing any new juice into the clubhouse this offseason was an issue, because it's the same players and the same personalities and the pressure is on them. And every time they go through a losing streak, they shrink from big moments and they put so much pressure on themselves. And it's almost like they're waiting for some kind of external force, like the firing of a manager or the trade deadline, to kind of trigger them into playing better. And maybe that happens for a month or two and then it all starts to fade away. It's like a drug, you know, you inject yourself with something and you get that high for a little while and you start playing better. Well, man, that wears off. You can't sustain that through an entire season. Eventually, you have to stop making errors and you got to start making better pitches on an 0-2 count. You got to stop using Seth Johnson at every turn. You know, I mean, that's just that's where this Phillies team is right now. They're coming off the high of firing Rob Thompson or the whatever it was that spurred them into action in May and June that got them going. It's clearly fading and they're just waiting for the next fix.
Boy, in my description earlier of like the scope of between their best and their worst and how they waver between the two. Yeah, the high highs and the low lows. There's not a lot of great metaphors for that. Like all of the things you'd reach for are not great. So that's probably a sign. Well, let me ask you. Let's do this. I'm going to read you three phrases, all of which are missing a word. And I want you to give me the word. So based on what we know, right. You know, everything we just, you know, we had it reaffirmed. Oh, yeah. The iciness between Dombrowski and Harper and Mattingly and Harper and, you know, things he could be displeased about. Bryce Harper has a blank relationship with the Philadelphia Phillies.
Bryce Harper has a blank relationship with the Phillies. I would say Bryce Harper has a... I don't want to say shaky. That sounds... Has a... Let's go. Man, you're making me come up with an adjective on the spot. Bryce Harper has a fluid relationship with the Phillies, I will say, right now. I think it can go in one of two directions at the moment. He's not getting traded. He's not going anywhere. And if you read Matt Gelb's reporting, Dave Dombrowski, they're looking at maybe signing him to another contract extension because his contract's going to expire at the end of 2027, and so they want to extend him with a plan in place for, you know, for his eventual successor. But yeah, I'd say fluid right now, because I mean, I don't really know how this is all going to work out at this point.
The next one, I'm going to actually switch it up, because it was originally next season blank will be the manager of the Philadelphia Phillies. But I think there's kind of an obvious answer to that at this point. So we can skip that and go instead with Dave Dombrowski is getting a blank amount of heat for his fault in all of this.
Fair. He's getting a fair amount of heat. I think he's taking exactly the right amount of heat. People don't want him back. People, I think, believe it's time to shuttle him off into the team president home, you know, for retired team presidents where he can go and, you know, and just retire. Go back to Nashville and, you know, get that major league team to Nashville. I mean, here's the thing. I'm not looking to kick Dave Dombrowski out, but he's been underwhelming these last few years in particular. A good trade deadline last year. I think it's fair to look at this team and see the decisions that some of the decisions that were made and not made and wonder what he was thinking. But some of the moves that he's made that have not turned out well, we all were big fans of. I mean, we were big fans of the Trey Turner signing. You know, we were ready to jettison Gene Segura and get Trey Turner in here. We thought it was a huge upgrade. And it really on the, look, the numbers indicate it has been, no doubt about it. Gene Segura is out of baseball.
And I'm sorry, we can't sit here and pretend that 100% of every person who follows the Phillies was in support of Trey Turner getting signed. And if you didn't, if you weren't, if you were one quiet little voice in the corner, then that's right. All you were. No one can claim they saw this right. coming or that right. they were against it. Right. And nor should they have been at the time.
Right, right. But I think the issue that gets Phillies fans riled up is the continued one-year deals for veteran outfielders hoping for a bounce back, how that fails year after year after year. You know, that those kinds of – and, you know, continuing to – Alec Bohm, still your cleanup hitter. You know, re-signing JT Realmuto to an extension this offseason because you had nothing better to do and nowhere else to – no imagination. I think that's my issue with Dombrowski.
Yeah.
No imagination. There's been absolutely no imagination to anything he's done. I think I've said this on a previous podcast with you guys, too. Pretty much every move he's made is one that we have all been saying should be made and predicted could be made. There hasn't been any deal where you're like, whoa, how did Dave pull that off? You know, maybe the Duran trade last year. But other than that.
Jesus Luzardo.
Yeah, Jesus Luzardo was a good trade. And if you want to look at minor trades, too, the Jonathan Boylan for Matt Strom deal this offseason has turned out to be a brilliant trade. I mean, that worked out well.
I'll go back to the 2022 trade deadline and say nobody had Brandon Marsh on their radar, and he went and got him. And, it's been up and down, but clearly there's been some major successes there as well. But to your overall, your point is, I think, absolutely correct. You know, you want to point to this, you know, well, there's only limited talent pool and players available and stuff. That's exactly what we're saying, is that these successes and in these moments with the Lizardos and the Durans and the Marshes is because nobody saw them. Nobody thought about them. Nobody was predicting them. And because you're a Hall of Fame roster builder, you looked at the landscape and said, okay, can't look here. No, we're not doing that. They're all over here. We can't compete with that. Ah, here's a guy. Here's a guy that, like, our coaching staff said, I can work with this guy. Like, this is a guy we're going to make a deal for. And we have a pretty solid foundation, or at least explanation, for why this is going to work. And you just, there's not enough of that. While it was non-zero in the occasions where you could say there were successes there, you can't say across the board that Dave Dombrowski's time here has been full of these, like, enlightened and strategic roster moves that made the team better. In fact, it was a lot of just feeling like Band-Aid, 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 Band-Aid. And the Band-Aid
keeps falling off. Money. He's just John Middleton's money, throwing John Middleton's money at people. And that's really kind of what most of the most impactful moves have been.
Yeah. So on that note, your last sentence is, Bryce Harper will blank win a World Series ring.
Oh, don't make me say it. Don't make me say it. I mean, if you're asking me, this window is closing. I don't see it happening this year. I don't know what 27 looks like with the labor issues. And then you're looking at 28, and these guys are 2 years older. I will say he will never win a World Series. And that,
are you just counting out, like, a bench coach role later in his career?
Okay. Well, Don Mattingly's never won a World Series, so.
Don Mattingly is a manager, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, but he came close. He came within two outs last year of finally winning a World Series, but didn't. Barry Bonds never won a World Series. Ken Griffey Jr. never played in a World Series. I mean, there have been some great.
Mike Trout.
Right. I mean, there have been some great players who have absolutely no postseason experience or accolades, and at least Bryce Harper has that. He played in a World Series, was an MVP in 22, had great playoffs in 23 up until the last couple games. And then, you know, and even in 24 was good. So, I mean, I think Bryce Harper has done all he can in his prime to win a World Series without winning one. I feel like that door is closing. I don't see this group, and I hope I'm wrong, but I don't see this group doing it. This feels like the last chance. And I think that's why everybody's so rankled, is because it does feel like it's certainly their last best chance with this group, considering how uncertain next year looks and how there are no young players in the pipeline coming up to retool the team and add fresh new energy.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, because since July 1st, the Phillies have the highest hard hit ball rate in the majors, according to Fangraphs. They also have the third highest ground ball rate in the majors.
I was waiting
for
that. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're also tied for third in grounding into double plays. Boy, you could just follow that one from start to finish. I was like, hang on, hang on. Don't get excited. Yep. The ball is not coming off the ground enough times for that to be an exciting statistic.
Well, do you have those stats in front of you, like overall that you're pulling from? Because I'm curious what the walk rate is. I'm curious what the on base percentage is. Because you can hit the ball hard all you want, but if you're striking out, that's just counting the quality of the contact when you do actually make it. It doesn't take into effect like how much they're striking out. It doesn't take into account how little they're walking. They're on base. Like if there's never anybody on base, you hit the ball hard all you want. It's not going to do a whole lot. You know, if you're striking out a whole lot, you're striking out 30% of the time that you get up there. That's a lot of non-contact that you're not even taking into account in terms of hard hit balls. And then you're right. If you're hitting those balls into the ground, you're going to hit a lot. These guys know where to play defense in the majors. Everybody's scouted to within an inch of their lives. Even from pitch to pitch, the infielders know what's coming and can shade one way or the other based on a breaking ball or a fastball. So, yeah, it's hard to make a living on the ground, and that's what the Phillies have been trying to do all year.
I noticed the hard hit rate at the top of the sample size list, and I wanted to start there because I thought I might have found some sort of peripheral crumb of potential. And then I followed that to its natural ending point and the ground balls and the double plays. And to answer your question, the Phillies have an 8.1% walk rate since July 1st. That is 13th. Putting aside a few ties, they're probably like 10th or 11th.
That's better than I thought.
But they're mid, which is how you'll generally find them in most offensive accumulative stats at the moment. Strikeout rate, well, now we're talking. Third in all of baseball. Oh. Second behind only the Reds in the National League. They've been striking out at 25.5%. That's over a quarter. So that's, also clearly hard hit rate not factoring into that statistic either. Prior to yesterday's game, Charlotte Varnes of The Athletic wrote, since the start of July, the Phillies rank among the worst teams in baseball in on-base percentage and OPS. It's 294 and 671, respectively, 25th in both spots. They are 3-6 since the All-Star break, slipping to 5.5 games behind the Braves in the East. They scored 1 or 0 runs in 5 games of their 9-game post-All-Star homestand. What a stat. Thanks for giving us the shorthand there on that one, Phils. Kevin Long feels encouraged by what he's seen from Schwarber, who is currently suffering from a gastrointestinal issue, so I wonder what that means, whom he said has felt more comfortable.
Hang on. I assume he made those comments before the gastrointestinal issue started, and that he's not referring, in fact, to what he's seeing from Kyle Schwarber's. Yeah, we'll move on.
It's
looking clearer, Kyle. You're in good shape.
He said, has felt more comfortable against righties lately. Long also said he is not worried about Harper, whom he has seen go through stretches like this before and snap out of it. We all have. We have all seen that. Then, in their nooner against the Marlins in Miami, things looked promising, even for a team that hasn't scored a lot lately and is missing Kyle Schwarber. Bryson Stott doubled. Trey Turner homered. Bryce Harper tripled. Alec Bohm drove in a run. Brian De La Cruz drove in a run. Jesus Luzardo, maybe not at his best, but was handed a 6-0 lead. It felt like this was a day in which he could hold it. Here's Todd Zielecki's write-up of what followed. Luzardo allowed a leadoff double in the fifth, with the Phillies holding a 6-0 lead. He hit 8-hole hitter Brian Navarreto with a pitch, then allowed a 2-out, 2-run home run to Heriberto Hernandez to cut the Phillies' lead to 6-3. Luzardo allowed a leadoff single in the seventh. Kind of missing here is the commentary of, hey, why'd he go back out there for the seventh? But he went back out for the seventh, allowed a leadoff single, walked 9-hole hitter Jacob Marcy with 1 out, then allowed a run scoring single to Otto Lopez to cut the Phillies' lead to 6-4. I don't know if you were watching the Marlins broadcast, but I believe on the TV broadcast, the announcers were actually thanking Don Mattingly for allowing Luzardo to face Otto Lopez because of how good of a matchup that was for Lopez before he got the hit. They were thanking him for that. Orion Kerkering and Jose Alvarado were unavailable to pitch, so Mattingly had Seth Johnson face Hernandez. Johnson entered the game with a 5.74 ERA in 15 appearances, Zielecki writes. Johnson induced a pop-up for the second out, then walked the next batter on five pitches because he's Seth Johnson, and he's just not very good. But Kirkering and Alvarado weren't available, so again, it was Johnson's ball. He used it to give up a two-run single, and a Griffin Conine homer off, hey, Jonathan Bolin, the guy everybody wanted to see instead of Seth Johnson. He gave the Marlins an 8-6 victory and a series sweep by a team that, again, had lost 12 in a row, coming into this series with the Phillies, a franchise record for the Marlins. John, Trey Turner says it's just about the team needing to play better. I mean, yeah, that'll never be wrong. That'll never, ever be wrong. So you can say that as much as you want. The Phillies have committed 60 total errors this season, and Trey Turner owns one short of a third of those errors.
Oh my
so,
gosh.
Yeah, I think he's right. I think they should play better. There's some certain areas where they could start. Then there's the skipper, who, again, I said seems eager to position himself on the other side from his team rather than with them and doesn't seem capable of making pitching decisions that improve the team's chances to win. Zalecki wrote, if he could do it again, Mattingly might go with Jonathan Bolin in the seventh inning instead. The way that's phrased, I don't know if that's a comment Mattingly made or if Zalecki's saying like, yeah, I mean, you know, maybe in his head he's thinking I would have gone with this guy here because of what happened. Who knows? But yeah, I think you can chalk that one up to another Mattingly, what are you doing? Kind of pitching management moment. Well, at least Mattingly can feel regret. And with this group, you can always blame sloppy defense, inconsistent offense, and base running buffoonery for their problems on any given night. They grounded into three double plays in Game 3 against the Marlins alone, and when they get the pitching, they don't score. When they do score, the pitching gives up any small to medium large lead they get. So, John, I mean, it's getting kind of, I guess it's kind of being a repetitive question at this point, but how do you want to hand out the blame? Or is there no reason to, and it's time to just, you know, find whatever solutions they're going to find?
Yeah, I mean, the blame is everywhere. Jhoan Duran in the first game of the series has his worst outing of the season and blows a game they should have won. And then they just they don't score at all in the second game. And then they don't get any more hits after the fifth inning in the third game. Like, got all those runs and then just shut it down. We've seen the Phillies do that before too. I think the blame's everywhere. I don't have any one specific area to blame necessarily. I think if you're looking overall at the total picture, I think the offense has been the most to blame this season. You look at how many times that they've scored one or fewer runs, and they lead baseball in times they've scored one or zero runs. They're also third in baseball in the number of times they've scored two runs or less, and they've done that in a third of their games this year, where they've only scored 0, 1, or 2 runs. Like, that's just you're not gonna win many games that way. And I know other people will look to the record with the top three starters in the rotation versus the record with the number 4 and 5 starters. And it's wild how much they win with the top three guys and how they lose seemingly every single time out Aaron Nola or the number 5 starter du jour gets the ball. And then you got the bullpen. I don't know who you trust right now in that bullpen. I mean, I still trust Duran. Bolin had been great until he gave up the home run on Wednesday. So I don't know where you go with that. Because even if you'd had Kirkering or Alvarado ready to pitch in that game, yes, I would go with them over Seth Johnson. But neither of those guys are carrying around ERAs like under 3. Well, I guess Kirkering is, but he's been really shaky of late. Alvarado's just kind of been setting things on fire all season long. I don't know. I don't have any one area to blame. Mattingly has stunk. The Stars have stunk. Kyle Schwarber and Bryce Harper has stunk. And yet this team's in a playoff spot. Somehow, through everything this year, this team is still in a playoff spot because it's a mediocre middle pack in the National League. I still think they're going to make the playoffs because I do still think they're better than the Nationals and the Pirates and the Cardinals and the Reds and the Diamondbacks and all of those teams lumped in there, the Padres. I think they're better than all those teams. But they're starting to make me doubt a little bit because team-wide, they're not playing complementary baseball. You know, it's like you said, when they don't pitch well, they hit. And when they don't hit, they don't pitch well. It's hard to define this team.
Nobody's bailing each other out. And you listed all those teams that I would agree that the Phillies are better than and should be able to beat. But you know as well as I do, when these guys get in a spiral like this and they start hanging their heads and woe is me and playing sad sack ball, they can lose to anybody.
Everyone.
And then suddenly everybody's jumping around celebrating how they beat the Phillies and they beat them in a big game that the Phillies had to win. And we've seen it happen countless times. And I was sort of hinting at this before with one of my fill-in-the-blank questions. But as there's so much blame to go around, the blame police are also out. And you can see plenty of people who are like, well, hey, why isn't Dombrowski getting any heat about this? To whom I say, you're just not reading the right commentary,
yeah, and paying attention.
Because, boy, I feel like I've been making a stink about Dombrowski on this front for a couple of months. But on top of that, lately, yeah, there's been plenty of blame thrown at Dave Dombrowski. Ricky Pitalico just did like a whole segment. I know, because I saw the furious thumbnail they put on YouTube of Ricky Pitalico saying, like, you got to start blaming Dave Dombrowski, as if it was like his idea. Do you feel that anyone from Mattingly to Dombrowski just like isn't getting the blame they deserve? Because I feel like, you know, everybody's just unloading at this point, and it's kind of tough not to even catch a stray blame-wise.
I think Paco Figueroa is getting off too late. That's my guy. Sorry. Let's throw some shade at Paco Figueroa. No, I mean, I think everybody is getting their fair share. If you're wearing Philly's laundry right now, no one believes in you. You're getting blamed, and you deserve it. Like, there's no one in the organization that can say that they're doing great. The coaching staff these players are so inconsistent that, you know, you wonder, like, why can't the coaching staff develop any of the younger players, the veterans that are here? Frankly, these guys are what they are, and they're just a year older, so they're a little bit less good and yet still are what they are, right? I mean, I'm looking at Alec Bohm. Is anybody surprised by what we've seen from Alec Bohm or Bryson Stott or JT Realmuto?
He's tired of being considered an automatic out, John. So
yeah.
Stop thinking of him that way.
I'll try. Well, as soon as he gets that OBP over 300, yeah. We can talk.
Like, again,
come on, man.
Even more directly than Harper's comment was like, yeah, man, no one else is in control of that.
Maybe
I don't know what to tell you.
I think there's also a sense of these guys maybe think they're better than they are. Like, Harper still sees himself as like an MVP caliber player. Alec Bohm taking offense at somebody being intentionally walked in front of him to get to him at the plate. You know, I'm tired of this happening. Burr, 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 burr. And, you know, are we, do you not see your numbers? Like, you're not aware of, you know, what this all looks like, how you've performed. I don't, delusional. That's like, those are delusional comments. I don't get it. This team, that's why I think their brain's broke. At some point, maybe it was game 7 of the NLCS in 23, their brain broke. But I go back to last year. Remember that Mets series in New York? The Phillies went into New York. I think they got swept in like 3 or 4 games, and everybody felt awful. No, we can't beat the Mets. We just can't beat the Mets. How are we going to win anything? We can't beat the Mets. And then Kyle Schwarber comes home, has his 4 home run game against the Braves, and the Phillies don't look back after that. That's the weird thing about this team, is every time something like this happens, every time we get here, they figure something out and they go on a run. And the question everybody keeps asks themselves is it sustainable? Is it for real? Will it matter in October? In the last 2 years, it hasn't. And it didn't. And it wouldn't. So I don't know. I don't know if they have another one of those in them. They seem to do that a lot. I don't know if they have another one of those get yourself up off the mat rallies here in this season. Maybe they do. I don't know.
And that's the thing. And it, like, perception certainly plays a role here in that still. I mean, Bryce is right. They've played pretty well after that, putting themselves in the hole earlier in the season. And it feels like the only way to prove that is looking at their record, you know, which is, again, you know, gets worse every time you get swept by the Marlins. But still, their record of being like generally 10, 11 games over 500 for a while. Obviously, I know that's less now, but like that is proof. But that it starts to feel like ancient hieroglyphics from another time, that like, well, these symbols point out that we are good. But it's like, yeah, but I just watched you for a week make like little league base running errors and be unable to field the ball if it goes to a certain spot and you know, get bleed runs, nullifying any kind of early offensive success. Like, I'm watching this happen and you don't look like a great team, but you're right. These things happen fast as it can feel like they haven't played good ball in a while, which, you know, you can say the entire post All-Star break has been kind of a wash for this team, a total wash for this team. Like you said, they also will suddenly, you'll turn back and they've been like playing well for a week, or they've won 2 series in a row, and you know, they haven't doomed themselves. There's just this perception, And I think part of it is the trade deadline, and no one really has an idea of what's going to happen, simply that something will and it won't be good enough. And on like with that factor compiling on top of everything else, that like the struggles they've had lately, the guys who should be hitting who aren't, the guys who should have been hitting but haven't, like all of that is just led to this rather bleak outlook. And, you know, I've got it too. I'm not saying I'm immune to it. It feels bad, especially then throw in 2027, and who knows what kind of season that'll be next year. You start thinking about the passage of time really quick and what they haven't accomplished, which has always been living in people's heads too. If they had won the World Series in 2023, like they should have, that's the year I think they should have, they had their best chance to win it. Yeah. Then this is maybe a different conversation. People are still mad and frustrated and sad at what feels like the an era that every losing streak makes it feel like the window is closing a little more. But at least there would be something to stake this era to. And you'd be like, hey, Dombrowski came here, delivered a World Series, like as promised, as advertised, as he does, then fine. But we didn't even get that. So we're not even like at this point after declining from the World Series. They're just declining from the height of not getting there and not winning it. Yeah. And that's obviously feeding into a lot of this anger.
That's why 2011 and 2010, they hurt. You know, they hurt a lot. But, you know, you had the 08 championship there that this group went and won it all. And that's what's so bizarre about where we are right now with this team. Because the 2022 season was a lot like this season. The ups and downs that they and how down they were so late in the season, before kind of going on a rally that really just the best part of their 2022 season was October. Like they didn't play that well the entire season until they got to October, and they got a reputation of this collection of big time players who perform in clutch moments, behind a raucous home stadium at the place that nobody wanted to play. And they go on this run and they become like one of the most beloved teams in franchise history. And in 23, man, they rode those vibes that whole season. You know, they didn't win the division, but they won the wild card. And it just felt like aside from Trey Turner's struggles that year, it felt like everything was kind of like moving in the right direction. They're blitzing teams in the playoffs, and then something happened. And now you've got this group that for the last 2 years and 3 years counting this one now feels the weight of it. And the identity of all these players in the minds of the fan base is so far removed from how we thought of them in 2022 when they took everybody on that run, and they did come up with the big moments. They did come up with the clutch hits and made the pitches when they had to. And the relievers did get the big outs when they mattered most, except until the end of the World Series. You know, it was just, it's a shame that that's kind of where we are with these guys now. Like there's just, I don't think there's a single player on this team outside of Kyle Schwarber and Christopher Sanchez, maybe Zach Wheeler, where the fan base would be like, and Duran, where the fan base would be like, yeah, I'd be okay with moving those guys. I'd be okay with moving that guy.
Yeah, I think you're right, because, you know, partially just because, you know, you're not losing any of the guys who make or break it for you, but also that was the kind of change people were trying to stir up coming into the season.
Right.
And people were trying to say that's what they wanted. And they, again, they were met with Dave Dombrowski being like, well, what did you want us to do? Not re-sign Kyle Schwarber? Like, nope, nobody said that. So no, that's not what we wanted. And also you tried to sign Bo Bichette. Can you imagine if we were in that disaster as well?
Yeah.
Hindsight is 2020, so we don't need to go down that road. But now that we know what's wrong with them, hey, how do you fix these Phillies? Well, things are pretty bleak there too. A few weeks ago, you would have heard Phillies fans talking about the 2-3 players they want Dave Dombrowski to acquire at the trade deadline to make the team more complete and competitive, addressing some clear flaws. And a few weeks later, it felt like those flaws were suddenly too big to be addressed by any available talent, and that the Phillies didn't have a lot of players with whom to make trades. Anyway, again, Dave Dombrowski will refute that point if you ask him. But after the sweep at the hand of the Marlins, there is a bubbling new brew of commentary in which people suggest with great confidence and, you know, anger that the Phillies, John, should blow it up now and just be sellers at the trade deadline. Is this a real suggestion or simply the new angriest thing you can say that people reach for after an infuriating series of losses?
Yeah, it's an emotional reaction. It's not based in reality. And anybody out there thinking the Phillies should or will do that, less cough medicine on a regular basis for you.
I'll go a step forward and say, what if they did? What if they did it?
Yeah.
Anyone suggesting they do it would be angry. that they had done it. I'm sorry, but they would.
and do you really think they're going to sell with Bryce Harper and Kyle Schwarber and Christopher Sanchez and Zach Wheeler and these and Joan Duran? Like, there's just no chance. Now, what they could do is a hybrid of buying and selling. They could look for ways to maybe move a couple of guys while also bringing in different players. And the example that I am thinking most often is now, they already had in 2006, they already had Shane Victorino in the fold, but you have Bobby Abreu, and Philly fans know this well. Bobby Abreu is a far better player than Shane Victorino overall. Abreu is a borderline Hall of Famer, and he had great seasons for the Phillies. For whatever reason, it didn't quite work in Philadelphia. And the Phillies wanted to bring Shane Victorino and his energy into the starting lineup and basically replaced Bobby Abreu, a future Hall of Famer, with Shane Victorino. And the team immediately got better. Now, that's not necessarily because of Shane Victorino there are fits, right? There are sometimes a player is just not a great fit with an organization, or their time with the organization has kind of run its course. And I think we're seeing that with some of these Phillies players. Alec Bohm is the clearest example of it. But I would even say, like, Bryson Stott. I love Brandon Marsh. I don't want them to trade Brandon Marsh, but Brandon Marsh has trade value. He's a glue guy to me. I think he's a guy you wouldn't want to include in this mix, but Real Muto. Could you trade JT Real Muto to bring in some other kind of catcher? Could you move Edmundo Sosa right now to get a different, utility infielder? Sosa's having a disaster of a season. It might just be moving one of those guys. Maybe you move Stott in a deal, even though Stott's not the problem. There's a way maybe that you can take him out of the equation, bring other people into the equation. Maybe that's where Zach Neto comes in, because there's a lot of heat with the Angels and Zach Neto and the Phillies and stuff. Like, I don't really know, but there is a chance the Phillies definitely need to, if it's not going to be at the trade deadline this offseason, shake things up. We've been saying it forever. They really need to do it. This is maybe one of those ways you do it. I don't know how exactly. But then again, I'm not on the phone with big league GMs. So I know Dave Dombrowski is kind of relying on him to have that imagination.
This is our general complaint about Dombrowski is I don't see what he sees, because he's better at what he does than I am, for obvious reasons. Right. So do one of those things that you're supposed to be so good at. That's what we feel like we've been short on. Jeff Passan wrote, "The Phillies have been aggressive in their pursuit of everything. Frankly, I'd anticipate at least one arm and one bat. Impact depends on your definition." That's a cop out. I'd argue there's not a ton of impact talent available, but players that can play a big role in the Phillies' success, sure. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like the national media hasn't given up on the Phillies, and like the team's fans, they are being given the slightest bit of grace here by saying, like, hey, look, there are players that can help them despite any kind of complaints that it's a desert out there for anybody in talent acquisition. Are you soothed at all by the Phillies being characterized as aggressively pursuing solutions? Because that kind of reminded me of, like, how a duck calm on the surface, but legs furiously moving beneath the water kind of thing. Because I don't know if I would have guessed they would be characterized that way in their pursuits. But again, when you don't know exactly what direction they're even looking in, they could be moving however they want. So is that something you felt? Did that make you feel any better hearing that that's how they're going about things?
Yes, but aggressive can mean a couple of different things. Aggressive can mean you're calling everybody, talking to everybody about everyone, and you're asking about a lot of players, and you're trying to fill a lot of different needs. Like, you're trying to fill outfield, you're trying to fill a right-handed bat, you're trying to fill a reliever or two relievers or a starting pitcher. You got scouts out watching Tarek Skubal or whatever it might be, even though you don't have a prayer to sign him. Is that the kind of aggressive we're talking about? Or is aggressive, you're willing to deal as many prospects as it takes to get the best players in here? And I think it's probably more the former than the latter. I bet you Dave's and Preston Mattingly and everybody else are making a lot of phone calls, sending a lot of texts. They're asking about a lot of players. They're sending their scouts everywhere. But at the end of the day, I don't think this is a situation where, first of all, I don't think they have the ammunition to do it. But even if they did, I don't think this is a team that is going to sell everything. and get aggressive in that way. So it does make me feel good that they are trying, that they are trying to do something. And I wholeheartedly believe moves will be made in the next few days. I think they will get players. I don't see a superstar coming, but I do see this team making moves to fill the three things that they need. They just might not be very sexy.
Yeah, at least one arm and one bat. Does that do anything for you? I think it just means whatever. And I think, to your point, the word aggressive gets thrown in there because it's exactly the kind of word that's broad enough to mean a couple of things, but interesting enough to make people go, well, look what Jeff Passan said. So
yeah,
that's why that word's out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'll wash your back if you wash mine. We'll say and it could be one of those things like we're being aggressive. Make sure you print that. You know, we're being aggressive in our pursuit of all these different people. Like, that's my guess is a lot where that comes from. It's like the team says they're being aggressive, so they're being aggressive.
Have you ever heard of, and I'm just asking this for no reason, team firing two managers in one season? I feel like George Steinbrenner had to have done that at least a couple of times. But
yeah, I think he fired Billy Martin one year, hired somebody else, then fired that guy and brought Billy Martin back. Or it was the opposite. He hired one guy, brought Billy Martin in, couldn't stand Billy Martin, fired him like 5 weeks later and brought somebody else. I feel like that has happened before with the Yankees specifically. I bet it was
that. That time he fired him like at the press conference where he was announcing his hiring or something. Yeah, it was one of those sequences.
Remember that? Yeah.
Yeah, just curious if there's precedent. Well, in any case, hey, there's a Phillies game tonight as they head to Baltimore and play another underwhelming team that could honestly just eat their entire lunch. Who knows? You know, again, when the Phillies are playing like this, it's the best time to be a team that is like trying to prove something, that's maybe playing a little better than normal, but it's still on the outside looking in. Marlins took advantage of that opportunity. Now it's the Orioles' turn to try and take advantage of that opportunity as the Phillies and Orioles play at 7:05 on Friday at Camden Yards. Your probable pitchers are TBD by your Philadelphia Phillies taking on Brandon Young of the Orioles. Christopher Sanchez gets the ball on Saturday at 7:05. He's facing Shane Baz. Then you have Zach Wheeler in the Sunday matinee at 1:35 taking on the recently extended Kyle Bradish. So you're actually getting a cross-section of some of the more decent arms the Orioles have to offer as well. None of them are lefties. That's fun. But this point, the only thing the Phillies can do to change people's opinions is go out there and win some ball games. That's really all that's left to do. Things look bleak enough. And, you know, thanks for sitting with us for an hour as we break all of that down. But at the end of the day, it is only barely August, not even by the time this is out there. So there is still time for these Phillies to rediscover, you know, the basic functions that allowed them to reach that 10 games over 500 point and play like a team that can make a wild card spot. But, you know, I don't want to get blamed for being too rosy and I don't want to get blamed for being too dark, but obviously these Phillies are in a dark place at the moment. There doesn't seem to be a whole lot to point to. So all you can wait for is the next game. So that'll do it for this episode of Hittin' Season. My thanks to my co-host, John Stolness. Liz Rocher will be back before you know it. She's unavailable for this Friday's episode. You can get new episodes of Hittin' Season 3 times a week anywhere you get your podcasts. And you can also find bonus Phillies podcasts at the Hittin' Season Patreon at patreon.com/hittin'season. I'm Justin Clue, and from WHYY, that's the ballgame. We'll talk to you next time on Hittin' Season.